Mr. Chan Cheng Yen, Rue 9. Mr. Chan, what were the activities that were on in the park?
Oh, it's a lot of things. Mostly gambling, you see. Those parks are all gamblers. They have gambling stalls, and people move around. And they got some slimas. Just not much, lah. I can't recollect all that now, you see.
Do you remember who were the people that normally frequented this place?
That can't say, eh? A lot of people go, even in the evenings when they are free, they just go there and they have a kind of a stall where they play those lotos, you know. So a lot of people go and gamble there. And just try their luck, like that only.
Any Japanese?
Yeah, yes, even the Japanese are playing there. So that day, my wife was also helping to do this, and then we find that the business is not very good. So I help the stall, my wife goes and work at these lotto stalls, just to be the helpers there, like people buying, they collect money, buying the cards and collect money. It's really 20 cents, and then they collect, when they win, they get the money, like that. My wife was doing that just to earn a little bit of money, and it happened there's a Japanese, he's a civilian, actually he's a military man, so he's in charge of the workshop in Malacca, where they call the former Wen Brothers workshop there, motor shop, selling cars, repair cars and all. So this man is in charge of that one. So he always comes and play. And my wife, it seems, he likes my wife very much, because my wife is a very talkative woman. She can entertain that, talk this and that. So one day, he comes to know that he is the boss of that workshop. They call it, at that time they call it is Nissan Jidosha. It means the Japanese workshop, you see, belongs to the government. It's still under the military control, you see. So one day my wife asked him whether you like to have any men to work in your place. Then she told me, I want, my husband got no work, I want to give, can you give him work? So he made arrangement with this Japanese. The Japanese said, okay, you ask your husband to come tomorrow. So she called me to meet him at that night. So he saw me, so he recognized me. Then the next morning, I went to the workshop, and immediately I got the work. Just a temporary work, or anything. So he put me in the lubricating department, you see, where people service the car, oil the car and all. So I just worked there for a while, you see, temporary.
Where was the workshop?
Just opposite my house.
And when did you start work?
I start work immediately. When I see him that day, immediately I got the job.
Do you remember which year was that?
Huh?
Which year was that?
It's 1942. It's the same year, what, 1942. That was, the time was somewhere in June, I think. June, yeah. Sometime in June. So automatically when the military government no more is changed into civil government, the workshop is still there, you see, but another Japanese takeover, a civilian Japanese takeover. So they reorganized that workshop. And I know quite a lot of people inside the workshop, so I was transferred from that oiling department to be a clerk, you see. So I got a position as a typist.
Initially, what was the nature of your work in the lubricating section?
Just to help those senior men to oil the military trucks, change the oil. Just all, you see. You know, lubricating of a car, you just got to open this, open that, and then put in the oil, this, and then spray the car like that, you see.
How many workers were in that section at that time?
Oh, it's only four of us. Four of us. But quite a lot of number of cars to service in a day.
Who were your other colleagues?
Those are the former former workers of the Wen brothers. Actually, when the Japanese take over, they call back all the old workers, you see, those that have been employed by the Wen brothers. Then later, they employ some more people in, just to create jobs for the public. A lot of people go in. Actually, there's no work at all. Japanese time, they got no work. The only thing that they were doing is transferring from one section to another section, removing from here to there. Then the next few months, they remove again to another section. This nothing, just like that only. Actually, who owns a car? Nobody owns a car at that time. During the Japanese car time, not much people got cars. Those people who have cars been requisitioned already by the Japanese. So it's all the military trucks. All the government vehicles. That's all.
How was your relationship like with your three colleagues?
Well, it's all right. Because at that time, nobody dare to talk anything. Well, as long as you go out work, everybody wants to leave. Yes, we don't like to talk anything about politics at that time. Japanese time, people are very cautious about politics. It's not open, you see. If you talk about politics or you talk bad about the Japanese, somebody may make a report and then they will be called and then they may cut your head. There are a lot of people being tortured, you see. A lot of spies going around. Nobody dare to do anything.
At your section, were there any managers in charge of all four of you?
No. It's all the Japanese are the head there. There's no manager or what, nothing. A clerical section is a clerical section. Workers are all controlled by the Japanese. You see? But when it comes to civil, under civil government, they turn into civil government. You see, another Japanese came in. That was a time when they had to reorganize differently. You see? There, even they don't have managers. The Japanese are the head. Then they have a chief clerk or something like that. Then anything that is concerned with the clerical session is under clerical workers. They got a foreman, you see. The head is the foreman. So anything, they go to the foreman.
Generally, the foreman and the chief clerk, what nationality were they?
The foreman is a Malay. The chief clerk is also the Malay, I think. Yeah, he's also a Malay boy.
Then the employees in the firm, were they, what were their nationalities like?
All kinds. Got Chinese, they got Eurasians, they got Indians, they got Malays, young and old, everybody there. It's not much to describe that.
What was the working conditions like under the when the shop was under the Japanese military?
Condition is all right, very strict. You cannot just play about. Those mechanics, they have their work, they have to repair. That we under clerical, we just do what we can. Whatever the Japanese wants, we will do it. See, I was a typist. So anything the Japanese wants to write, letters or what, I just write. I just type for them. Then as time goes on, I think 1 year later, when food was so very scarce at that time, so the Japanese has got to buy some food for the staff. So where got food? They buy tapioca, you see. So in order to get a tapioca, then we got one man in our department, quite an elderly man, he go and arrange. Then you got somebody must go and collect that tapioca. So I was very active, young, and I was also a hardworking man. Then the Japanese called me one day and say, okay, you don't do this typing. They have engaged girls to do the typing. Then he say, you can drive? Yes, I said. So I have become the ration clerk, they call it, they say. So every time I will go and every week I will take the van and I will go down to collect the tapioca. Right at the tapioca field there, you know. The man will dig the whole thing, then I went inside and take it out. It's quite far from town, it's very far, it's more or less 20 miles away from town.
Who were the people who were planting the tapioca?
Those are the villagers, you see. So they got a contract from the shop, then we have to go and collect because they have no transport. The Japanese want the thing for the stuff, then we go and collect. So I go down and collect every week. Once a week, I go up from morning till evening, I come back, the whole lorry. Then bring back, and then the next day we distribute it.
During that time, how much were you paid?
Oh, very small. I think the salary was, can't remember, it's about 40 to 50 cents a day only, you see. But as time goes on, it's increased.
Besides paying in money terms, what other kind of rations did they give you besides tapioca?
Rice. The Japanese, sometimes they have rice. And then the military or what, they will bring the rice to the workshop. And then you have a storeroom for that. And then from there we divide the rice. We don't have to pay. You are given free.
How frequent were these rations given?
Well, rice they give once a month. Then they got bread also. Those bread made from this corn, from corn, you know. Those breads are not very good. It's very hard. You know? Then sometimes rice, and then sometimes tapioca like that. But each person gets only a little bit lah. For they see what how many family you got, and then they give. Some get 10 catties, some get 15 catties like that lah.
You mentioned that the discipline was very strict. Can you give examples of it?
Yeah, very strict. You see, that was when it was under the military management. It was very strict. That Japanese officer was very strict. If you work, you cannot talk. You cannot just idle around and go to one place and chit-chat or smoke or something like that. Every 15 minutes, he will go around. Everyone has to work properly. He finds anybody idling or washing hands and all like that, he just slap you only. But in the civil, it's different, you see. Under civil, it's different.
How different was it under the civilian?
Because the Japanese executive leaves everything to the foreman, they say. He very seldom goes inside the workshop. And actually, he is also not always inside the office. He always go out.
How many Japanese were there working in the workshop?
There's only two, you see. One administrative, the other one in the workshop. Head of the workshop. Maybe he knows about car repairs and all.
Under the military and civilian, two Japanese only?
No more. When it's under the civilian government, that means it's all under one person. The military man is no more. He has been transferred to other place.
How was the relationship like between the Japanese and the local people, the workers?
Well, we find it quite all right. We can talk. And then he always asks suggestions, what we people want, this and that. I think it's quite fair, see, that time. And those people who are hardworking, they are always get the benefit. And some people don't like, they just resign and go somewhere else.
Can you remember what was the daily routine like?
Well, actually, there's not much work at that time, you see. So we just pass our day. If we got no work, we just wait for the time, and then we go off. We start work at 8 o'clock in the morning, and finish at 5, break hour at 1 hour, like that only. So it goes on like that. There's not much work at that time.
Were you asked to celebrate any kind of Japanese occasions?
No, I don't remember any occasion. Never had that.
Or any exercises or singing before you start work?
No. At that time, no. But at times, sometimes only, you got a roll call, you see. Just like that, to find who and who. Yeah, actually, they have a punch card, they know. At that time, when brother already got a punch card, they got a clock with a punch card, they know what time you come, what time you go, like that.
Did the Japanese use the same system?
Yes. Yes, it's the same system.
Can you remember any pleasant or unpleasant experiences that you had while you were working for them?
Oh, I can't remember that. But during the Japanese time when it was under the military manager, that one, that man is quite good. He is a little bit eccentric, I think. His mind is a bit puzzling, you know. So, you see, every Sunday he called all of us, those that he likes, he would select few of us. He just drive a band, go around. From Malacca, we go up to Tampin, you see. We go to Tampin. By the time we reach Tampin, we stop at one restaurant there, eat what you like, he will pay. And after that, you come back. Just like that. That is that man, that Japanese officer, he's quite, he's a happy-go-lucky man. He likes to enjoy himself. Eh? And quite occasionally, I think, during his period, around 4 months, I think he was 4 months or 6 months, I find that alternate Sundays, he calls us and then we go out, like that. Then when come to the civil government that time in charge, the civil Japanese, he's also very good. Sometimes after a few months or 6 months like that, he call all of us and then he had a meeting and then he say, what about we have a party at his bungalow, like that. So we all go down to his bungalow, have a party, he give a makan, this and that. And I was so surprised at one time when he gave a party there. I find a lot of English food, you see, cigarettes, all those things. I think was the Red Cross that was sent by the British. It was not given down to the public. The Japanese military has taken it, and they all got those things. We have been longing that cigarette for a long time. We can't even buy and smoke, and we found they are having that. So when we were at his party, he offered us that cigarettes, biscuits. Where got that time Japanese? We don't have that thing. And that man is a very good man. I can't remember his name. He's a very good man. He is very kind to all the workers. Everyone likes him. He doesn't scold anybody. You do something wrong, he'll tell you it's wrong, and then you teach you.
What about your personal impressions of the other Japanese outside your working place?
I don't meet a lot of these other Japanese. I don't get involved with other Japanese, except the place that I work. I consider him as a boss, that's all.
Initially, you mentioned that you didn't like the Japanese.
Yeah.
So, did your attitude change after you mixed around with them?
I think I changed my attitude because I can't go on like that. Then I will find that I can't live. So, in order to live, I have to change my attitude, forget about this, what happened to me during the war, and just go along my life again. But we had the impression that the British will be back one day, you see. We had a secret radio. There are some people who got secret radio, and then we get information what's happening Even one day I even go and listen to the radio. It's just right in town, in Malacca town. He was one of the principal, one of a teacher in a school, English school. And he was caught. They told somebody go and report. He was caught. He was tortured. He got this radio at his house. But he don't keep the radio in the house. He kept the radio at the kitchen, at the chicken cage there, you know. They got a lot of chicken they put inside there. Nobody know. But somebody in the group go and report. He was caught. I ever went one day to hear that radio. That's how we lately, says I go on 1-2 years later, we heard a lot of news. The Americans been attacking a lot of places, Rabaul, all sorts of places. And in the night, sometimes planes fly overhead. God, Japanese time, you know, everybody lives in fear.
So how did you know about the Japanese surrender?
Oh yeah, the one a lot of people know. See, as time go on, when the Japanese wants to surrender, then there's a lot of killing going on, you see. Those, the MPAGA people, they call it the guerrillas or something like that. And then they will attack in the night. Information been spreading. A lot of people get news, I don't know where. So we knew that the war will end sooner or later, I think. Then towards the when the Singapore landed, the British landed in Singapore again, the Lord Louis Mountbatten, then the whole Malaysia, after they signed the surrender in Singapore, whole Malaysia is finished already. So the Japanese are withdrawing, and then the MPAGA people come into town. So you know it's already a surrender. And there's a lot of commotion also. Those people who are siding their Japanese, they were all being taken in, and some even murdered, like those detectives and all. I know one or two detectives which are on the side of Japanese, and they treat very badly to the public. They think they have been working with the Japanese and they are in the detective. People kill them. That's what I know. See? All sorts of things going on, you see.
Were there many such incidents in Malacca itself?
Not much, but those people who have been mugged by these people, they kill them. Some run away.
Do you know who were these?
I don't know. But we heard a lot. People been saying, oh, this, you know, that former detective was very nasty, Indian detective. They kill him. They catch him and kill him. You know?
Who were the day that killed?
Those anti-Japanese people. We are not in that group. We don't know them. Maybe they are a member of the MPAGA, underground MPAGA. We don't know them. A lot. We know a lot. Japanese spy a lot. We know the underground a lot. We don't know them. We are not involved. We go as a citizen our way. We are not marked by them. We can go freely. But those are on the side of Japanese. And then they get caught.
Did the MPAGA come into Malacca?
Yeah. Before the British troops could occupy, the MPAGA has already blocked all the road.
So what did they do in Malacca?
They can't do anything. They just block only, waiting. But the Japanese are still there. MPAGA is on one side, the Japanese on one side. They cannot come in. Because Japanese know that if they allow these people to come, they will create a lot of trouble. They wait for the British to come in and then hand over. That is always the law, is it? This MPAGA, the British don't even trust much on the MPAGA. They are communists, isn't it? MPAGA, they are the communists. Those are the Jinping people.
Did they step into Malacca town to set up their headquarters or anything?
No. They have their headquarters, but we don't know where. Is it? A lot of some local people also join, but later they just don't want. They just disband themselves. But we member of the volunteer force. We are not afraid of them. So when the British come, we are still we are still the volunteer. You see, at that time we are already British armed forces. So when the British came in, we just we go back to our headquarters and report, send in our names there. Everyone has to report. Then immediately you report, you were given an allowance. I remember they gave, when the British came in, volunteers were given about $100, $150 as money to spend first. You see, we got no money, they give you that. Then later on we put in our claim, and then they all volunteers got their back pay, you see. 3.5 years back pay. It depends on the rank that we have. So I hold no rank. I was still a private. I think on the whole, I got about $600 only. But later, with the case of my massacre and all, I put in a claim. See, those people that went down to Singapore, they can claim lah. Like your personal belongings and all, you put in a claim, then they will pay you. See? But they don't pay according to what your claim is. They have the committee and they know how much exactly to pay you. See? So I got an extra of another, I can't remember, about $400 to $500 extra on my ex-grisha, they call it as grisha payment, you see. Something like ex-grisha payment, they call it. I put in a claim. But the claim must be signed by an authority people, you see. You have to get the justice of peace people to confirm of what you claim for. You see? And things been going on like that until the British government when the British come back, it was still under the government for 6 months. Then we report immediately, those who want work will be given work.